Welcome to another episode of the Tutor Zone podcast, where a little time makes a big difference. Today, our guest is Maria Maldonado, clinical assistant professor of family and medicine and director of pipeline and recruitment. And that's really what we're here to talk about today, Maria. I want to make sure that our community, our students, our parents really understand what it is that the USC PA pipeline program offers and what it is, because in the world of high school students, in the world of middle school students, we understand these programs as more pathways, things that kind of connect us to the future. And I really think that's what you guys do. And that's why I want to make sure that our community and our listeners understand that. So please clarify for us, what is this program all about? Maybe give us a little bit of the history about it.
Sure thing. Thanks for having me, Manuel, and Tutor Zone team. It's great to talk about our program and share with students, families, parents, guardians, everyone out there, teachers and administrators. So what is going on with Pipeline is we started this version of what we call Pipeline. So it could be like Pipeline Pathways Program. I think you're probably more familiar with Pathways. So it's very, very similar concept at USC in the PA program in about 2014, this version started. And when I say this version, some of the back history is there has always been some kind of pathway and support for those students who are underrepresented in medicine. And so when we talk about underrepresented in medicine in the healthcare workforce, we're talking about students from different ethnic, cultural, racial, economic background, educational background, abilities, disabilities, different categories that sometimes give people a disadvantage in being recognized and having access to resources, education, having access to enter different career paths. And so a version of this has always existed even before I arrived to USC. And so that version may have also looked a lot more like a known program from the past called the Health Career Occupation Program. A lot of folks may know that as HCOP. And so that created kind of an entryway with support for students and who were interested in joining the healthcare workforce to go and talk about the PA profession. Part of what these pathway pipeline programs do is they connect you with a lot of healthcare professionals that you can ask questions of, build a mentorship or a sponsorship with. They can, you know, offer their insights and sometimes if you need support in terms of a letter of recommendation, a reference, they may be the person to provide that for you. So when we started, we would just do these, you know, one-time visits and we would talk about profession and we noticed that we were getting a lot of invitations. And so, under the guidance of one of my mentors in doing this work, Mr. Les Howard, he said, why don't we try to build it so that we have a central location where we are and everyone comes here and you're really feeding, you know, 2-3 birds with one crumb when you do that, and the strengths. And so, you know, we want to really be able to play to everyone's strengths, including our families, parents, and students. And then we want to be able to address the needs identified by them and also to help us kind of build that. It is a partnership in building this together. And so from that, we started with an exposure to healthcare careers, which just encompassed like kindergarten through 12th grade. But we noticed that it was mostly high school students who were coming and joining us. And we started with, we'll feed everyone pizza. And we have a volunteer doctor from the residency program who's, you know, able to come on that Saturday morning. And, you know, let's ask this other group who already meets because they're doing something similar, but they have, high school students already who meet regularly once a week. Let's just invite them over and let's see what happens. We did that. We had a great turnout. I mean, it was like 12 students. We didn't even know who would show up. And we fed him pizza, and even that devolved because we wanted to emphasize healthier eating, and we wanted to, again, really feed as many birds with that seed and really hit at things addressing health and wellness and nutritional eating and, you know, having more equity in certain areas or communities when it comes to access to everything. And so it evolved into, you know, we have PA students at our school who were very interested in volunteering. My jaw dropped when I, you know, just sent an email out, would anybody like to help us host, you know, our next event? We're going to talk about a different health career every month. And it was just, even though they're PAs and we were talking about nursing, or we were talking about occupational therapy or ultrasound technology, they did not ask what the topic was. They just wanted to help. And so from there, we were convinced that there was an interest for families and students to learn more about the different health careers besides the two very common ones are nursing and like medical doctor. And even medical doctors like MD and DO. So there, even that distinction wasn't always clear. But so then we just started to ask, you know, cast the wide net amongst the students. How many of you who worked in occupational therapy before coming to PA school? Who did, you know, respiratory therapy? Who did medical assisting? Who did, okay, will you like take on a different month and then put together a presentation where you talk about that profession, and we have a panel and we talk about like, what are the requirements? What is the salary? Because we always want to talk money. What is the salary that one can expect to earn if that's a career path of choice? In what settings does a respiratory therapist work? In what settings does a psychologist work? So we really wanted to build like a cornucopia of exposure to everyone. And we've learned a lot since then. We learned that there was a great interest in students and families once they learned about all the different health careers to pursue them. So we definitely banked on partnering with a lot of community agencies and other school sites and training sites that are available for free or affordable cost to residents of the community. So one thing we always want to keep in mind is accessibility, and some programs that are out there are for profit and may leave people with a lot of debt. And so we just want to inform people of all the different options, and whenever we can, embrace kind of like, again, that pathway of a warm handoff to like the East LA Occupational Center or the East LA Skills Center for those in the East area, because they offer a lot of support to residents in that area. And partnerships became a huge part, being able to tap out to already professionals who had graduated from their respective like dental programs, et cetera, reaching out to them and asking if they would, you know, give of their time to come back. And the response has always been great. We've also learned that when students were interested in pursuing the paths, that they may not necessarily have the grades, or they may not know how to boost their grades to be competitive or to even apply for scholarships. And so we reached out to, you know, somehow, I don't even know, we were able to connect with Tutor Zone, and Tutor Zone was more than willing to be one of those volunteers to give back a lot of time and resources to help, you know, navigate students through this pathway of choice. And students, you know, they began to work with Tutor Zone to help with their study skills. So it wasn't just like, here, let me tutor you. It was, let's look at this holistically. Let's do some like academic coaching and counseling. So like, what are your goals? And let's see your transcripts. What do your grades look like? What extracurriculars are you involved in? What is, you know, are you playing sports? And also, you know, what are your SAT or whatever, you know, standardized score or standardized test needs to be taken to apply for a particular school. And so Tutor Zone really helped with that. They provided math and reading, writing, English comprehension enhancement skills for our students during these Saturdays where they would meet. So it evolved to just sit there and, you know, listen to all these panels and learn to like, okay, I want to do that. How do I do that? Okay, let's go ahead and look at, you know, where your grades are and whether, you know, we can get you coached up to get ready to apply. And not only can you apply, but you can now, if all those things are in place, you can also apply for funding and scholarships that you probably hadn't considered and didn't know about. So from that grew another branch of Pipeline, which was the college readiness workshops and leadership and academic development. And we were only working with high school students at the time. And we realized that with the high school students, you know, it'd be great if we could start even younger so that they have more time to develop those positive study skills and just academic habits, and, you know, being able to understand like why it's important to build a professional relationship with professors and teachers and counselors, because you're going to need a letter of rec. And also you need support, you know, like if you have people that know you better, a lot of times, I would say most people in education, a lot of them that really want to help students out are there because they want to help students out. And so just teaching or reinforcing some of the social skills, interpersonal skills, the like, this is how you greet someone, you know, think about a resume, think about like your first impressions with someone, think about how you show up to places, think about how you speak and present yourself to be able to navigate through these spaces that are built in a certain way. And so just knowing how to navigate once again through this pathway. And the readiness workshops, again, we started where it became accessible to middle school kids. So now we do have this program where we start to kind of work with and coach students younger than high school. And then another branch that was simultaneously coming about was the family engagement branch. And that was because we cannot look away from the importance and how critical it is for parents to be part of this process. No matter what we do or what we say, parents matter. Guardians, parents matter so much in influencing the decisions and, you know, from the mood, the confidence, the ability to believe that they can do it, to, you know, everything, etc. Children need their parents to provide that for them. It really goes a long way. You know, again, called over parents to get involved, and they set the agenda. Every month, they would also meet with us. So while their students are meeting through pipeline pathway programming, parents, we would meet in the conference room, and we would have, you know, our coffee and snacks, and we would say, what do we want to learn about? How can we best support our students? What do we not know about? And a lot of questions were coming up, like, I want to learn more about IEP. What is that? I want to learn, like, how do I go, if I have something to talk about with a teacher or a counselor, how do I do that? You know, who do I call? We had questions about DACA. We had questions about immigration status and opportunities and how to navigate conversations if parents had been stopped before and questioned about their immigration status. And so we found a social justice lawyer from Loyola Marymount University who was, you know, more than willing to come and speak with parents and address these issues. So again, parents set the agenda, and then we go out there and we dig into our pool of volunteers, and we ask, you know, can anyone come and host this? And sometimes, actually not sometimes, most of our meetings at the beginning, and even still, we have a high percentage of Spanish-speaking parents, Spanish only. And so a lot of our speakers that come in are able to provide both English and Spanish workshops with them. And if not, we find a volunteer who's able to interpret. And so we're able to get through it and, again, try to build more inclusive spaces. And we realize that the needs are different in different areas, different cities, and, you know, that we try to also build into the equation when we're trying to build the programming and find the speakers and volunteers. And then another two branches we have are the workforce prep branch. And that came about because not all students are looking to go to college. Some students are actually very, very gifted and very talented and very necessary in working in other fields or in more like certificated paths or in trade paths or vocational training paths. And so the workforce prep offers an opportunity for students to learn a little bit more about other medical professions, but like hands-on. And so that we're still building out. What we've been able to do is we meet and we go over medical terminology and anatomy. We go over things like certain conditions and disease states, and we teach them the way that physician assistant students are taught. So they learn about, like, let's say we're going to talk about a particular fracture. So Boxer's fracture. So we'll name that fracture. We'll discuss what it is. We'll say, how do people get it? What are some of the symptoms? How do you diagnose it? So I'll tell you, it's like through an x-ray. And then what do you look for on that x-ray? And how do you treat it? And so, you know, what's patient education? We go through, you know, that process for every condition, whether it's orthopedics, whether it's diabetes, whether it's high blood pressure. We just go through that structure. And we are building an opportunity for students in high school to be able to go to a mobile clinic setting and to interact in that environment as well. And like I said, we're building that branch. And so we're looking for other paths and other careers where we can build some more internship opportunities. And the other branch is the pre-PA branch. That pre-PA branch was always there since before I arrived in 2012. Obviously, it was a different version of what it looks like now. But this is particularly for students who already know they are interested in becoming a physician assistant. So if they already know that they want to apply to physician assistant school, then they join this pre-PA pathway because of workshops and all the meetings are geared towards preparing their application, making sure that they are practicing their interview skills, making sure that they're getting their community service hours. And if they have questions, they can be connected to a PA to, you know, kind of learn a little bit more if they have any questions along the way that inevitably will come up. So those are some of our branches and some of our history.
Yeah, that's awesome. There's so much good there that I want to highlight a few things. First, what I love about this program and what I feel maybe connected me to it a little bit more was I feel like you're serving myself when I was in high school. And the very need that a student like myself had, I migrated here from Costa Rica when I was 9. My mom cleaned apartments for us just to kind of, you know, do well. And I went to business school because I thought that's just what you do to make money. Because I had no idea that there was careers for me waiting in fields like the PA program, et cetera. So I love going in there and just seeing all these kids get so much knowledge that I wish I had once upon a time. Because I love my path, but I wonder sometimes where other pathways could have led me and so on. So I love that that's what you guys do. And then I think most people still wonder probably then, like, how did we get connected? Mm-hmm. I think what you guys do amazing, listening to you talk almost makes me feel like your like core capability, the thing that the USC PA pipeline does so well is cast that net. Like, you guys are just so good at that. How do you do that so well, Maria? Like, I mean, I know you mentioned like we just throw out, you know, emails, but I think by now is it almost seem like your net is so wide that it's almost like magnetic where, you know, people are just kind of, you know, enticed to want to work with you guys to kind of be a part of the cause that you guys are kind of running?
That's a great question, Manuel. I really do think it's about people who believe in what we're doing or trying to do. And I think we try to build it together. Everyone who comes to our program, whether as a participant, a volunteer, a donor, or in any sense of the word, a teacher, a presenter, they all have a piece of this. They all are contributing. They all have a stake in something that is very near and dear to many of us for personal reasons. I was also part of, I didn't know it was called this, but I was part of pipeline pathway type programs back in the day. I had a lot of support and didn't realize that those structures were there. And they I don't think a lot of us knew, and not a lot of us used them. And so
I still know, which is why I love that we're doing this today so that more people find out.
Exactly. And I think it's based on like a community model philosophy. And I don't know how much culture plays into this, but, you know, kind of helping each other out and, you know, like, okay, I made it through. Let me go back, you know, like, and then really reaching back or sending the elevator down, as some people say, or, you know, always staying in connection to preserving, you know, how can we get out of this? How can we work together? How can we improve our quality of life? Because I think it's the cause. I think it is the centering purpose of people wanting to contribute and to help another human being and improve their whether it's their economic status, whether it's to see them achieve their dreams, you know, anything in that gamut is possible through the work that we do. And I, you know, one thing that comes to mind is that we also attract people who know people that want to do the work. And so it's really like this very webbed and netted connection to connection and other connections. I think we have a pretty welcoming family vibe. I think we definitely focus on seeing the best in our students and the best in everyone who is pitching in and trying and showing effort and working hard, and who is willing, again, to do the work, who is willing to try, who is willing to show up, who is willing to dream and, you know, really, really try a little, whether, again, as a participant or like on, you know, the donor volunteer side.
And I was thinking too, like, how, as I hear you talk about it, how did you guys evolve so fast? Because that, I think that word, the evolution of you guys, like the initiative of it, really did come from hearing your students. And I say that from personal experience, because the way I got connected with you guys is I actually got an email once asking me to come and talk about financial aid. And this was probably 4 or 5 years ago, at least. And now the other day, you know, I got a chance to meet with the parents in the community outreach program, and we talked about financial literacy. And you think about, you know, like, I thought this was PA students. Like, I thought this was like, you know, the USC Keck Medicine School, like, and it's all about medicine. And what are you guys doing about talking about financial literacy? And I think that that is why your net is so strong, because it is those causes that I could have just stayed in my lane and said like, okay, Maria, we'll help you guys with college coaching stuff. But now somehow we're talking about this financial literacy stuff. And I think that's what it is. It's that we all get so connected to this really cause that it brings passion to just keep doing more and doing right by the people. By the way, this whole financial conversation is a big part of you guys, is it not? Like, you guys really do intentionally make sure this is part of the conversation, correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It goes back to the holistic approach. And I, you know, there are other similar pathway programs out there, and they're great. And I think we're all trying to offer, you know, support and help in some way, shape or form, or even just bring together, you know, what there is and bring awareness to it. You know, it's kind of almost like it's already there. The structure is there, but not a lot of people come. And I think that part of it is because people don't always feel like they're welcome. Traditionally, higher education was not built for people that were of color or were, you know, it was for like white Christian men, land-owning men. And so it was a very distinct group. And, you know, for that reason, I don't know if like, if we talk about things that get passed on or notions or ideas, or where do these things come from? A lot of spaces are not always very welcoming, and, you know, a lot of them are, or they're transforming into that or attempting to transform into that. And I think this is something that our PA pipeline program has always had at its core values. It's welcome people, open the door for people. A lot of times I grew up on a taco truck. My mom, you know, drove a taco truck. And so I've always been aware of service and how to, you know, make people feel welcome and treated well. And, you know, here's a warm burrito, here's something, and always with a smile, and genuinely do it because you care about the other person. And that's how I was brought up, in that notion, in that business, in that environment. And a lot of that carries over into how we do pipeline. You know, obviously we don't hand out burritos. Sometimes we do, but
that was great.
But it's really about like, you know, hi, how are you today? You know, like, what do you need? How can we help? Like, you know, how can we, you know, make your day a little better today? Or tell me about what you're looking for. Like, that goes back to the listening in what we do. And so financially, I know I deviated, but in going back to why at least I do pipeline is because I believe in what we do. And I believe it is an opportunity, and it is a way for us to address health disparities and to do something about social determinants of health. And so a person's ability to earn income, a person's access to education, a person's, you know, environment where they grow up, where they live, where they can afford a home. All of those things are tied to education and access to education on some way, shape, or form. And all of those things come together to affect wellness. All of those things have an impact on wellness. And so as a physician assistant, when I was practicing and seeing patients, you know, I could help take care of patients. But I knew that when they left that, a lot of patients, when they would leave, you know, that visit, the things that were at the root causes, a lot of times were not the health related issues. It was access to income. It was ability to build wealth. It was the ability to maybe not stress over these things. And, you know, maybe that's why they were there for anxiety. And, you know, there was, and I'm like, what is the root of this? And a lot of the root causes, I'll tell you, as a physician assistant, always point me back to like access to education, access to finance, finances. And, you know, if we can really, in this pathway, help students achieve their goals economically, it's going to put them in a whole other earning bracket. And they can then, their life will change. And I can say this firsthandedly because I grew up in you know, below federal poverty level, like 300% below. And being able to navigate through and become a PA has changed my life trajectory and that of my children's, just simply because I have a different income level than how I grew up. And what I've realized too is that a lot of times, because some of us grew up very like low income and in low income environments, we don't always understand this whole notion of financial literacy, like what invest, ¿qué es eso? Savings, what?
And that's what we talked about with the parents when we had our financial literacy conversation. Like, the goal is to get your kids to, you know, maybe go to PA school, or maybe go to USC, or end up some career that's gonna change their financial life. But then what do you do when you get there, and how do you manage that finances? And we had such a good conversation with parents about budgeting and having like the 50, 30, 20 rule, where you put, you know, 50% goes to your needs. And then you, like, conversations that if you just start having them with your kids, it doesn't mean you have to sit there with your kids and, you know, give them this formula of how to do it. Just talk about it. And so many parents in that meeting said, I don't remember my parents ever talking to me. I remember my dad just being stressed out and going into his room and balancing his check. And it's like, oh, stay away from dad, because dad is, it's financial, like, day of the month, right? And just that conversation alone. And I think there's a lot of people, I think, especially in this moment, who are skeptic about a lot of these conversations. And it's, but the beginning conversation with the kids is so powerful, that you have it at a young age. You just sit there and, you know, you count coins with your kids, and you take them to the bank to deposit them at a young age. Just those seeds you plan. And I think you guys do an amazing job of that. I again, this is why I wanted to have this conversation. Another part I love about the USC PA pipeline is the what PA students are doing there. I feel we are very connected in that. Like, I really try to hire young emerging professionals to come and teach my kids, because I think whom better to teach you how to be a good student than someone whose profession right now is practically to be a student. So you can talk about more than just solving math. You can talk about annotating and how it applies to your life and how to time manage. And that's what you guys do too. Like, you guys have PA students coming in and sharing that knowledge. I find that to be almost like a game changer. I think it's such a great model for the kids. Why don't you kind of wrap it all around that? Like, how do you feel that the PA students really bring such great benefit to your program? I know you mentioned earlier how, you know, volunteering and so on, which, by the way, I think in a way, I don't know if the volunteers know this, but I think they're transforming their own life as they're doing it. I think a lot of us don't think about that sometimes. Like, I'm going to go volunteer. When we lead others and we, like, really just give as much as we can, we end up transforming ourselves, which is the greatest part for, I think, your volunteers. But yeah, just bring it home with your PA volunteers, because I think they do such great work that I kind of wanted to leave them with them, if that's okay with you.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't know if you've noticed, I cannot stop smiling in this interview. I mean, I think I always reflect back to PA pipeline program, and it just brings me an immense amount of joy. And I think it speaks to what you're saying on the level of the volunteer, of, like, you know, doing the work or being part of something bigger, of doing you know, work that can be impactful in other people's lives is so fulfilling to the person also doing it. And I think it's just, there's moments when I stand back and I look at, you know, like a Saturday when everyone's moving around and either helping out, listening to the presentation, et cetera, setting up the food. And I take steps back and I think, this is beautiful. Like, this is people coming together for a common cause, and people are not paid to be here. They're volunteering. People are not forced to be here. They chose to be here. A lot of the participants and the volunteers chose to be there. And I think there's beauty in that. I think there's a lot of humanity in that and good. And so, you know, going back to our volunteers, I think a lot of volunteers can see themselves personally in, you know, being some of those students who are sitting there, you know, learning. Or some of the students, I'll be honest, are probably like, I'm here because my friend's here. But I think like even that is like, okay, this is a good influence. Like, this is probably a better talk than maybe, I don't know, whatever other thing you was gonna take your attention on the Saturday morning. But I think the volunteers can identify with a past experience, a past life, and the hope. I think the hope of being able to contribute to the next generation. They themselves carry busy schedules. They're in a training program that has them in class Monday through Friday, roughly from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. And if they're not in class, they're trying to study for the next test. There are weeks where they have two exams in 1 week. They have an average of one exam or one quiz a week. And they're in this program for, at least at our program, they're in this program for 33 months. And so it's pretty intense. And they're still able to keep up their grades and carve out time to come back and give back. I've had the experience to work with some volunteers where, after their second year, they go to clinical rotations. So the first year, they're like, we call didactic students. They're in the books, they're studying, they're in class, they're there. The second year, they go into clinical rotations to hospital, clinic, jail system, you know, and prison system to provide care. And then they come back at their third year, they finish off in a hybrid way. But at any rate, the way that pipeline is structured is that volunteers are mostly active their first year because they're on campus already. And the second year, we already know that they're going to leave because everybody evolves. We all know the cycles of life, right? So we wish them well and we support them and we always welcome them back. But we know that the first years that come in, go ahead and, you know, take on leadership roles and keep the program going. And those second year students, I had a second year student 1 year in clinical rotations. And I said, you don't need to be here. I know you have like busy schedules. You're probably on call. You're doing a 24-hour shift, you know, and you're in the ER. No, you know, Ms. Maldonado, I needed to come here. And I'm like, oh my gosh, tell me more about that. And that student needed to come back because they feel the warmth. They feel the welcome, not only for them, they feel it for themselves too. And it reminds them of why they pursued a profession as a physician assistant in the first place, because they want to serve, they want to help, they want to make a difference. They want to be part of something bigger than themselves. They want to be able to, you know, contribute to the next generation, whether it's through educational access, through, income access, through, you know, being able to also themselves pursue a career as a, you know, physician assistant. But overall, you know, going back to when I was sharing, it's all about wellness. You know, it's about the volunteers' wellness on some level, and it's about wellness for those individuals that they're around. And so one thing that I would like to talk a little bit more about when people do volunteer and volunteer work is to caution about the notion of saviorism. Sometimes people do work for others, but really only to feel good about themselves, and that's okay. But I think big picture, what we started with the conversation is to listen. I think as long as we can listen and really try to build for the best interest of, you know, the students that we, and the students and families who are at the center of this work, I think, you know, if we put them at the center and remember to elevate their voices and their wishes, you know, we can be more aware of when our saviorism notions come in, because sometimes we push our own agenda in our way, or what's comfortable for us, or what we're comfortable giving or doing, without regard for who we're doing it for. And so that's just more of like a consciousness thing, because we can get lost in that and then push in a direction that is not putting those that we are attempting to serve at the center of our work. So I'll say that, and I think our volunteers do a pretty good job of finding that balance. And I see it. I see it because our volunteers are able to also draw their own boundaries, and then, you know, kind of question whether, you know, they're able to volunteer or not on that day, or and, you know, they don't push their own agendas. We do it again as a group. We make decisions as a group. We have discussions. And so we kind of, I think, keep each other accountable to make sure that we are considering who's at the center of our work.
This has been an unplanned conversation that I think we just become passionate about, and it takes us in really good places. I want to kind of wrap it around with what students tangibly and parents tangibly might see if they attend the USCPA Pipeline program. As a parent, you may be dropping off, or your kid may be logging on Zoom, and they may be going to, you know, learn CPR or learn a lot of different medical terminology or practices, but they also may end up in the English class, or they may end up in the math class, or they may end up working on their personal essay workshop. And so the different programs that they get are, I think, really impactful, really meaningful. And as a parent, I mentioned you could drop them off, or they can go on Zoom, and you can end up, you know, having one of these financial literacy classes. Or so I think the overall, I wanted to make sure parents can see the benefit of spending a Saturday morning once a month, really making sure that you just become more knowledgeable about all these conversations. We will be bringing on Ms. Elizabeth Padilla to our next conversation. She's a community outreach coordinator and the family engagement chair, just to really make sure we specifically speak to a lot of those programs more, as I know Maria and I really wanted just to introduce this program to make sure everyone can take advantage of this. Ms. Maria, do you want to leave us with anything as we kind of wrap up? Like, to you, a Saturday morning, I'm guessing, does encompass a lot of that. And that's what parents could kind of envision if they do attend something like this.
Yeah, so you can envision first starting the process with filling out some registration, a registration link, so that we have your information and we can send a Zoom link. At least until the June of this year, we will be on Zoom. And starting in July, we plan to be back in person at the campus in Alhambra. And parking is free on the weekends. I don't know if that matters, but you can picture that. That's one more thing, less thing to worry about. And so you fill out these registration forms, and we get all that in, and you are free to drop off your student or your child, sorry. And you yourself are also welcome to stay to join one of the family engagement meetings, or to observe as well. And or you can come back and pick up your child after the session is over. We do encourage you to stay to the family engagement sessions, especially so you can better inform the process of the work that we're doing. And then students will sit in a classroom, in a physician assistant training program classroom, and they will, you know, be able to experience a little bit about a different health career each month. And our calendar is available. Some more information, if you look on our website. And they'll be able to also ask questions of the speakers and interact with the PA students. The lines can get long sometimes for registration, but it's, you know, it's also part of the process of us getting to know your child face to face and knowing their name. We tend to have some workshop hands-on skills. So, you know, depending on what profession we're featuring, we tend to break off into some of our clinical skills rooms, and students have an opportunity to either learn how to suture or learn how to take a blood pressure, or, you know, learn a little bit more about mindfulness, meditation, and yoga. If we're talking about mental health careers, for example, we've had speakers talk about art therapy. So they themselves get to do maybe some drawing or go through the experience of what would be recommended in that profession or part of your job in that profession. We do provide a meal. In the past, we have been able to provide a lunch meal and maybe, you know, some continental breakfast, and we try to make everything healthy. So we do have like fruits and grains, granola, and things of that sense. And so if there are any allergies or anything we should be aware of, we ask you that in the registration forms. And that's part of the gist of it. Some students actually will not be on that campus if everything goes well. They actually, depending on their grade level and what branch they're in, they may be meeting us at a mobile clinic site that day. They may be meeting us at, you know, a clinic site to do a tour of a healthcare setting. So, you know, it can vary. And, you know, if they're in the crew lead program, they may be sitting in and receiving math instruction. They may be sitting in and receiving reading comprehension instruction and practice. They may be sitting in and learning about how to write a resume. So it can vary. It really just depends on their age range and their interest and their willingness to participate.
Great. Thank you so much, Maria. We look forward to talking to Elizabeth and learning more about the family engagement component. Thank you for joining us at the Tutor Zone podcast, where a little time makes a big difference.